The things of this world are merely conventions of our own making. Having established them, we get lost in them and refuse to let go, giving rise to clinging to personal views and opinions. This clinging never ends. It is samsara, flowing endlessly on. It has no completion. Now, if we know conventional reality, then we'll know liberation. If we clearly know liberation, then we'll know convention. This is to know the Dhamma. Here, there is completion. Take people, for instance. In reality, people don't have any names. We are born naked into the world. Our names arise only through convention. I've contemplated this and seen that if you don't know the truth of this convention, it can be really harmful. It's simply something we use for convenience. Without it, we couldn't communicate. There would be nothing to say, no language. I've seen Westerners, when they sit in meditation together in the West, when they get up after sitting, men and women together, sometimes they go and touch each other on the head, contrary to our customs that we have in Thailand. When I saw this, I thought, hey, if we cling to convention, it gives rise to defilements right there. If we can let go of convention, give up our opinions, we are at peace. Accepting, giving up, letting go, this is the way of lightness. Wherever you're clinging, there's becoming and birth, right there. There's danger, right there. The Buddha taught about convention, and he taught to undo convention in the right way, and so reach liberation. This is freedom, not to cling to conventions. All things in this world have a conventional reality. Having established them, we should not be fooled by them, because getting lost in them really leads to suffering. This point concerning rules and conventions is of utmost importance. One who can get beyond them is beyond suffering. However, they are a characteristic of our world. Take Mr. Bunma, for instance. He used to be just one of the crowd, but now he's been appointed the district commissioner. It's just a convention, but it's a convention we should respect. It's part of the world of people. If you think, oh, before we were friends, we used to work at the tailor's together, and then you go and pat him on the head in public, he'll get angry. It's not right. He'll resent it. So we should follow the conventions in order to avoid giving rise to resentment. It's useful to understand convention. Living in the world is just about this. Know the right time and place. Know the person. Why is it wrong to go against conventions? It's wrong because of people. You should be clever, knowing both convention and liberation. Know the right time for each. If we know how to use rules and conventions comfortably, then we are skilled. But if we try to behave according to the higher level of reality in the wrong situation, this is wrong. Where is it wrong? It's wrong with people's defilements, that's where. People all have defilements. In one situation, we behave one way. In another situation, we must behave another way. We should know the ins and outs because we live within conventions. Problems occur because people cling to them. If we suppose something to be, then it is. It's there because we suppose it to be there. But if you look closely, in the absolute sense, these things don't really exist. As I've often said, before we were laymen, and now we are monastics. We lived within the convention of layman, and now we live within the convention of monk. We are monks by convention, not monks through liberation. In the beginning, we establish conventions like this. But if a person merely ordains, this does not mean he overcomes defilements. If we take a handful of sand and agree to call it salt, does this make it salt? It is salt, but only in name, not in reality. You couldn't use it to cook with. Its only use is within the realm of that agreement, because there's really no salt there, only sand. It becomes salt only through our supposing it to be so. This word liberation is in itself just a convention, but it refers to that which is beyond conventions. Having achieved freedom, having reached liberation, we still have to use convention in order to refer to it as liberation. If we didn't have convention, we couldn't communicate, so it does have a use. For example, people have different names, but they are all people, just the same. If we didn't have names to differentiate between each other, and we wanted to call out to somebody standing in a crowd saying, "Hey, person, person," that would be useless. You couldn't say who would answer you, because they're all person. But if you called, "Hey, John," then John would respond, and the others wouldn't. Names fulfill just this need. Through them, we can communicate. They provide the basis for social behavior. With even a little intuitive wisdom, we'll be able to see clearly through the ways of the world. We will come to understand that everything in the world is a teacher. Trees and vines, for example, can all reveal the true nature of reality. With wisdom, there is no need to question anyone, no need to study. We can learn from nature enough to be enlightened. If we have awareness and understanding, if we study with wisdom and mindfulness, we will see Dhamma as reality. Thus, we will see people as constantly being born, changing, and finally passing away. Everyone is subject to the cycle of birth and death, and because of this, everyone in the universe is as one being. Thus, seeing one person clearly and distinctly is the same as seeing every person in the world. In the same way, everything is Dhamma. Not only the things we see with our physical eye, but also the things we see in our minds. A thought arises, then changes, and passes away. It is Nama Dhamma, simply a mental impression that arises and passes away. This is the real nature of the mind. Altogether, this is the noble truth of Dhamma. If one doesn't look and observe in this way, one doesn't really see. If one does see, one will have the wisdom to listen to the Dhamma as proclaimed by the Buddha. Where is the Buddha? The Buddha is in the Dhamma. Where is the Dhamma? The Dhamma is in the Buddha. Right here, now. Where is the Sangha? The Sangha is in the Dhamma. The Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha exist in our minds, but we have to see it clearly. Some people just pick this up casually, saying, "Oh, the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha exist in my mind." Yet their own practice is not suitable or appropriate to that. It is thus not befitting that the Buddha, Dhamma, and Sangha should be found in their minds, namely because the mind must first be that mind which knows the Dhamma. Bringing everything back to this point of Dhamma, we will come to know that the truth does exist in the world, and thus it's possible for us to practice to realize it. For instance, Nama Dhamma. Feelings, thoughts, imagination, etc. are all uncertain. When anger arises, it grows and changes and finally disappears. Happiness, too, arises, grows and changes and finally disappears. They are empty. They are not anything. This is always the way of all things, both mentally and materially. Internally, there are this body and mind. Externally, there are trees, vines, and all manner of things which display this universal law of uncertainty. Whether a tree, a mountain, or an animal, it's all Dhamma. Everything is Dhamma. Where is this Dhamma? Speaking simply, that which is not Dhamma doesn't exist. Dhamma is nature. This is called the Satcha Dhamma, or the true Dhamma. If one sees nature, one sees Dhamma. If one sees Dhamma, one sees nature. Seeing nature, one knows the Dhamma. So, what is the use of a lot of study when the ultimate reality of life, in its every moment, in its every act, is just an endless cycle of births and deaths? If we are mindful and clearly aware when in all postures, sitting, standing, walking, lying, then self-knowledge is ready to be born. That is, knowing the truth of Dhamma already in existence right here and now. At present, the Buddha, the real Buddha, is still living, for he is the Dhamma itself, the Satchadhamma. And Satchadhamma, that which enables one to become Buddha, still exists. It hasn't fled anywhere. It gives rise to two Buddhas, one in body and the other in mind. The real Dhamma, the Buddha told Ananda, can only be realized through practice. Whoever sees the Buddha sees the Dhamma. And how is this? Previously, no Buddha existed. It was only when Siddhartha Gautama realized the Dhamma that he became the Buddha. If we explain it in this way, then he's the same as us. If we realize the Dhamma, then we will likewise be the Buddha. This is called the Buddha in mind, or Nama Dhamma. We must be mindful of everything we do, for we become the inheritors of our own good or evil actions. In doing good, we reap good. In doing evil, we reap evil. All you have to do is look into your everyday lives to know that this is so. Siddhartha Gautama was enlightened to the realization of this truth, and this gave rise to the appearance of a Buddha in the world. Likewise, if each and every person practices to attain this truth, then they too will change to be Buddha. Thus, the Buddha still exists. Some people are very happy saying, if the Buddha still exists, then I can practice Dhamma. This is how you should see it. The Dhamma that the Buddha realized is the Dhamma which exists permanently in the world. It can be compared to groundwater, which permanently exists in the ground. When a person wishes to dig a well, he must dig down deep enough to reach the groundwater. The groundwater is already there. He doesn't create the water, he just discovers it. Similarly, the Buddha did not invent the Dhamma. He did not decree the Dhamma. He merely revealed what was already there. Through contemplation, the Buddha saw the Dhamma. Therefore it's said that the Buddha was enlightened, for enlightenment is knowing the Dhamma. The Dhamma is the truth of this world. Seeing this, Siddhartha Gautama is called the Buddha. The Dhamma is that which allows other people to become a Buddha, one who knows Dhamma. If beings have good conduct and are loyal to the Buddha Dhamma, then those beings will never be short of virtue and goodness. With understanding, we will see that we are really not far from the Buddha, but sitting face to face with him. When we understand the Dhamma, then at that moment, we will see the Buddha. If one really practices, one will hear the Buddha Dhamma, whether sitting at the root of a tree, lying down, or in whatever posture. This is not something merely to think about. It arises from the pure mind. Just remembering these words is not enough, because this depends upon seeing the Dhamma itself, nothing other than this. Thus, we must be determined to practice to be able to see this. And then our practice will really be complete. Wherever we sit, stand, walk, or lie down, we will hear the Buddha's Dhamma.